strange. A room is like a person. It has feelings. Well, whatever. This room says its name is Sheila. Sheila? That's the room's name? Sheila wants to know we appreciate her. I wasn't sure how to respond to that. We need to ask permission to have our event here, he said. So I'm asking Sheila if it is okay with her. What is she saying? I asked, feeling a little foolish asking the question. She says it is okay. Well, that's good, I replied, remembering that my deposit on the room was non-refundable. Dr. Hulen went on to explain, I was in an auditorium once, getting ready to do a lecture, and I was talking to the chairs. I asked, is there anybody I've missed? Does anyone have a problem that I need to take care of? One of the chairs said, you know, there was a guy sitting on me today during a previous seminar who had financial problems, and now I just feel dead. So I cleaned with that problem, and I could just see the chair straightening up. Then I heard, okay, I'm ready to handle the next guy. Dr. Hulen's talking to chairs now? Somehow, I left my mind open to hear more about this unusual process of his. He went on to explain the following. What I actually try to do is teach the room. I say to the room and everything in it, do you want to learn how to do Ho'oponopono? After all, I'm going to leave soon. Wouldn't it be nice if you could do this work for yourselves? Some say yes, some say no, and some say I'm too tired. I remembered that many ancient cultures regarded everything as alive. In the book Clearing, Jim Pathfinder Ewing explains that places often have stuck energies. It shouldn't be too crazy to imagine rooms and chairs having feelings. It was certainly a mind-expanding thought. If physics is right, that there is nothing but energy making up what we perceive to be solid, then talking to rooms and chairs just might be a way to rearrange that energy in some new, cleaner form. But chairs and rooms talking back, I wasn't quite ready for that at that time. Dr. Hulen looked out the window at the downtown skyline. The huge buildings, the state capitol, the horizon looked beautiful to me, but not to Dr. Hulen. I see headstones, he said. The city is full of the dead. I looked out the window. I didn't see graves or death. I saw a city. Again, I was learning that Dr. Hulen used both sides of his brain in each moment, so it could see structures as metaphors and speak them as he saw them. Not me, though. I was just asleep in my shoes with my eyes open. We stayed in the hotel room for maybe 30 minutes. As far as I could tell, Dr. Hulen walked around cleaning the room, asking for forgiveness, loving Sheila, and cleaning, cleaning, cleaning. At one point, he made a call. He told the person on the other end where he was, described it, and invited her impressions. He seemed to get confirmation about his own impressions. After he hung up, we sat at a table and talked. My friend says this room will let us do our dinner here as long as we love it, he told me. How do we love it? Just say, I love you to it, he said. It seems silly. Say, I love you to a room? But I did my best. I had previously learned that you don't have to actually feel I love you for it to work. You just had to say it. So say it, I did. After a few minutes of silence, Dr. Hulen spoke more words of wisdom. What we individually hold, memories or inspirations, have an immediate and absolute impact on everything, from humanity to the mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdoms, he said. When a memory is converted to zero by divinity in one subconscious mind, it is converted to zero in all subconscious minds, in all of them. He paused before continuing. So, what happens in your soul moment to moment, Joseph, happens in all souls at the same moment. How wonderful to realize this. More wonderful, however, is appreciating that you can appeal to divine creator to cancel these memories in your subconscious mind to zero and to replace them in your soul and the souls of all with divinity's thoughts, words, deeds, and actions. Well, how do you reply to that? All I could think was, I love you. Eating with the Divine. Over 70 people came to the private dinner with Dr. Hulen and me. I had no idea there would be so much interest in this unusual teacher. They flew to Austin from Alaska, New York, and other spots. Some drove from Oklahoma. I never could figure out why they all came. Some were curious. Some were fans of my books, such as The Attractor Factor, and wanted to take the next steps with me. I still didn't know what to say. I still didn't know where to begin. Dr. Hulen seemed comfortable going with the flow. He ate dinner at one table, and everyone hung on his every word. The following experience is from my friend Cindy Cashman, who, by the way, will be the first person married in outer space. See firstspacewedding.com.
It was Saturday, February 25th, 2006. I went to downtown Austin to listen to Dr. Hulen speak. I sat next to him at dinner. His message is to be 100% responsible. I got to witness some powerful energy shifts. There was a lady at our table, and she kept blaming this man for not calling the hospital when she had an asthma attack. Dr. Hulen paused and said, I am only interested in you, and I heard that you need to drink more water, and that will help your asthma. Her energy shifted right away from that of blame to gratitude and attitude. I was so excited to witness this because I noticed how I was silently judging her by saying to myself, she is into blame, and that I find myself wanting to walk away from people who are into blame. What Dr. Hulen did was take the negative energy and totally transformed it into a loving, positive energy. Next, I pulled out my bottled water, and I pointed to the hotel water, and I said to Dr. Hulen, their water is not very good. And Dr. Hulen said to me, do you realize what you just did? When he said this, I realized right away that I just sent negative vibes to the water. Wow! Again, I was thankful for becoming aware of what I was doing. He was telling me how he clears himself all the time, meaning when this lady was blaming the man, Dr. Hulen asked himself, what's going on in me that this came up in her? How can I be 100% responsible? He sends his energy up to the divine and says, thank you. I love you. I'm sorry. He heard the divine say, tell her to drink more water. He also told me, I know how to clear, so she gets what she needs and I get what I need. He talks to God and God talks to them. When I'm clear, I will see everyone as God sees them. I asked Dr. Hulen if I could make an appointment to see him, and he said no, because the divine told him that I already had an inner knowing. That was a beautiful confirmation for me to hear. Overall, the message I learned tonight was, 1. Witnessing how Dr. Hulen transformed the lady's energy from complaining to that of gratitude. 2. I got to see how I judged the lady and the water. 3. Understanding the system he uses to clear himself and how powerful that is for all of us to use. 4. To remember to say thank you and I love you more often.
I began the dinner by spontaneously explaining how I learned of the mystery therapist who healed an entire ward of mentally ill patients. I had everyone's attention. I invited people to ask questions as Dr. Hulen and I held a public discourse, much like Socrates and Plato might have done, only I felt more like Plato than Plato. Dr. Hulen began by saying, people ask questions like, well, what about beliefs? What about emotions? What about that sort of stuff? I don't deal with those things. I don't deal with how come kind of crap. But you are going to ask me that, so I have to deal with it. But it's like if I reach over and I touch something and it burns me quickly, immediately I lift my hand up. So when something comes up, even before it comes up, I've already taken my hand off. It's like before I walked into this room. This room is sacred. Before I walked in, I made sure that I talked to the room. I asked the room its name because it has a name. Then I said to the room, "Is it okay for me to come into the room?" The room said, "Okay, I can come in." But let's say the room said, "No, you're kind of, excuse the language, crappy." So then I get to look at myself, do what I need to do, so that when I come as I come, as you hear that old phrase about physicians, heal thyself. So I want to make sure that I want to come in healed, problem-free, at least for a moment. I interrupted Dr. Hulan to set the stage for everyone. I wanted everyone to know who he was and why we were there. What we were doing was spontaneous and free form. I advised everyone to relax and stay open. With Dr. Hulan, you never know what will be said or done. He asked everyone why someone would get breast cancer. No one could answer. Neither could he. He pointed out that there are millions of bits of information floating around in any moment, but we aren't aware but of maybe 20 bits at any one time. It was a reoccurring theme with him. But it was the essence of his message. We don't have a clue. Science has no certainty of what's going on in our life, he explained. Even mathematics is unclear because of zero. In the end of the book, Zero, The Biography of a Dangerous Idea, the author concludes, "All the scientists know is that cosmos was spawned from nothing and will return to nothing from whence it came. The universe begins and ends with zero." Dr. Hulan went on to say, "So I have taken the universe of my mind back to zero. No data on it." You hear different kinds of ways of putting it, void, emptiness, purity. I don't care what you call it. My mind is back to zero now. No matter what is coming up, even when I am not even aware of it, the process I am going to talk about is constant, incessant zeroing so that I can be at zero. I could see most people were riveted by Dr. Hulan, but some were, like me, still in the dark. But Dr. Hulan kept going, saying, "What happens is that only when your mind is at zero is where creation can take place, and it's called inspire. In Hawaiian, this inspire is called ha." So if you've ever been to Hawaii, the word ha means inspiration. Of the word Hawaii is the word ha, and y is water, and I in Hawaii is the breath and the water of the divine. This is what the word Hawaii is. The word Hawaii itself is a cleansing process. So when I am anywhere and I check, I say, okay, before I go into the room, what is it that I need to clear, which I don't know? I have no idea what's going on. So what is it? So if I hear a cleaning process, which is called Hawaii, as I apply it, it will get a data that I am not even aware of and take me back to zero. Only at zero. And something that you need to realize is the mind can only serve two masters, one at a time. It will either serve whatever this is going on in your mind, or it will serve inspiration. This other stuff is called memory. This was getting even more fascinating. From there, Dr. Hulan went even deeper. Divine intelligence is where all of this inspiration comes from, and it's in you. It's not out there anywhere. You don't have to go over there. You don't have to go over there. You don't have to seek anybody out. It's already in you. The next level here is called the superconscious. That's simple enough. Over here, the Hawaiians call this the Aumakua. All right here means across all time and space. And Makua means Holy Spirit or a God, which means that there is a part of you that is timeless and there's a part of you that has no bounds. That part of you knows exactly what is going on. Then you have the conscious mind, Hawaiians call it Yuhani. Then you have the subconscious, the Hawaiians call it Yunihipili. So, one of the most important things to be aware is to question, who am I? So, what we are saying, what I am sharing with you, is that your identity consists of these elements of mind. Now, it is important for you to know that this mind is empty. So, this mind is zero. So, who are you? You are a divine being. That's zero. So, why would you want to be zero? When you are zero, everything is available. Everything. So now, that means that you are created in the image of the divine. I'm going to be clear about this because I hear certain things, but I want you to be clear by the divine. So, you are created in the image of the divine. That means you were created void on one side of the coin and infinite. As long as you are willing to let go of trash and be empty, then immediately what happens is inspiration fills your being and now you are home free. You don't even have to know that you are home free because most of the time you won't know. Where is it? Where is it? I've been clean. Come on, tell me where it is. I'll work more. Most of the time you won't know. When the intellect gets hooked into being stuck, oh, it gets more stuck. It's what the Hawaiians call, excuse my language, kakai paya. Anybody know what kakai paya means? It means intellectual constipation. One person then asked, but if you have a challenge with another person, are you saying it's me, not the other person, that needs corrected? If you have a challenge with somebody, then it's not with that person, Dr. Hulen declared. It's that memory that's coming up that you are reacting. That's what you have a challenge with. It is not with the other person. Now, I've worked with people who hated their husband or hated their wife. A woman one time said, I am thinking about going to New York. I'll have a better chance. Then I heard the divinity say, well, wherever she goes, that's what goes with her. Dr. Hulen then explained that when someone contacts him for a therapy session, he looks at himself, not the person who called. For example, the other day I got a call from the daughter of a woman who was 92. She said, my mother's had these severe hip pains for several weeks. While she's talking to me, I'm asking this question of the divinity. What is going on in me that I have caused that woman's pain? And then I ask, how is it that I can rectify that problem within me? The answers to those questions come, and I do whatever I'm told. Maybe a week later, the woman calls me and says, my mother's feeling better now. This doesn't mean the problem won't reoccur, because there are often multiple causes for what appears to be the same problem. But I keep working on me, not her. Another person asked about the war overseas. He wanted to know if he was responsible for it. More exact, he wanted to know what Dr. Hulen was doing about it. Oh, I consider myself responsible, Dr. Hulen declared in no uncertain terms. I do the cleaning every day, but I can't say I am going to do the cleaning, and I want that taken care of. Only God knows what can happen. But I'm doing my part, which is to do the cleaning, like clear out hospitals. We don't have a psychiatric hospital for a unit for people who kill people in Hawaii anymore. It ain't there. I have done my part the best I could. Maybe if I had cleaned even more, there would be even better results. I am human, and I do the best that I can. I could see that Dr. Hulen was getting tired and sensed he wanted to end the evening. It had been a remarkable time for all, but it didn't stop that evening. The next morning, after our evening lecture and dinner, several people had breakfast together. including me, Dr. Hu Len, Elizabeth McCall, author of The Tao of Horses, and a few others. Whenever I'm around Dr. Hu Len, I begin to get quiet inside. I might be feeling the zero state. I might not. Who knows? But at one point, I had the sudden inspiration to hold a weekend event and call it something like the Manifestation Weekend. I don't know where the idea came from. At least I didn't at the time. Now I know it was an inspiration from divinity. But over breakfast, it felt like a good idea I did not want. I was busy with projects, travels, promotions, fitness contests, and more. I didn't need another to-do item on my plate. I tried to resist the idea. I decided to wait and see if it would just go away. It didn't. It was still in my head 3 days later. Dr. Hu Len told me that if an idea is still there after several cleanings, act on it. So I wrote what became my most poorly written email of my entire life and sent it to my database of contacts. To my amazement, one person called and registered for the event 3 minutes after I sent the email out. She must have been sitting there in front of her computer almost waiting to hear from me. The rest of the signups were just as easy. I only wanted 25 people for the event. It was my own self-imposed limitation, simply because I felt I could speak to 25 easier than I could speak to 2,500. Besides, I had never done this seminar before. In fact, I had no idea how to do it. I told Dr. Hu Len about the inspiration and my concerns. "My only advice is to not plan," he said. "But I always plan," I explained. "I write out my talks, create PowerPoints, and have handouts. I feel better when I know where I'm going in my talks." "You'll feel better once you trust the divine to take care of you," he countered. "We'll clean on this." By that I knew he meant that because the issue came into his experience, it meant it was something he needed to clear too. Again, everything is shared. Your experience is my experience, and vice versa, once we are aware of it. I did my best to not plan the event. I gave in to my fears at one point and created a manual to hand out to everyone. But I didn't use it and never looked at it, and no one cared about it. I began the event by saying, "I have no idea what to do at this event." Everyone laughed. "No, really," I said, "I have no idea what to say." They all laughed again. I then proceeded to tell everyone about Dr. Hu Len, Ho'oponopono, and how the phrase, "you create your own reality," meant more than they ever thought before. "When someone is in your life that you don't like," I explained, "you created that. If you create your own reality, then you created them, too." The weekend was powerful. Even today, when I look at the group picture of everyone from that event, I feel the love we all shared. You can see this picture at beyondmanifestation.com. But this was only the beginning for me. I still had much to learn. The evidence. Many people had breakthroughs from the dinner and from the Manifestation Weekend retreat. In this section, I'll let you hear their true stories so you have a sense of the power of the Ho'oponopono process.
Here's one from Lewis Green. "Dear Joe, I want to thank you again for putting together the evening with Dr. Hu Len. Thanks are also in order to Suzanne for working on the details, including ordering me a vegan dinner from the Hyatt. I enjoyed sitting with you and Narissa and getting to know both of you, as well as the other wonderful people at our table. I felt privileged to have a front row seat to hear Dr. Hu Len, and for his grace and generosity in counseling me in response to my questions. The 2 weeks following that night have brought me many amazing experiences which I will gladly share with you. One thing that I had to remind myself of is that Dr. Hu Len sought clearance from the divine to assist me, so that while I tried to apply Ho'oponopono as often as I could remember, which turned out to be sporadically, I was still benefiting from his prayers. I got the request for Dr. Hu Len's stories right after listening to the recording. The first experience I'll mention is the email from Suzanne inviting stories and responses from the evening with Dr. Hulin. Interestingly, I purchased Life's Missing Instruction Manual and downloaded the MP3 recording of you and Dr. Hulin. I had literally just finished another listening to the recording when I found Suzanne's email in my inbox. My lawsuit went national with no publicity. The second experience is pretty incredible. I had a new lawsuit to file before I left for Austin on February 23rd. I couldn't get everything together in time to make the post office before I left, so I mailed it the next morning from an Austin post office that was on February 24th. Inexplicably, my materials got lost in the mail and didn't arrive at their destination for filing until Monday, March 6th. I belong to a listserv for consumer advocate attorneys from around the country. Last Friday afternoon, an attorney from Connecticut posted a capsule summary of a case that had been filed in Canadian County, Oklahoma, and asked if my colleagues in Tulsa had filed it. Well, I almost fell over. It was my case. I emailed her back and called her office to find out how she found out about it. Then I spent the next hour trying to find something on Google. No luck. She emailed me back and said that she subscribes to an online service called Courthouse News Services. That's at courthousenews.com, which has stringers and probably moles who monitor legal filings and opinions from around the country and report important, significant, or simply intriguing developments. The one-paragraph synopsis appeared on the front page, right column of the website, and I had sent out no publicity on the case. Ironically, the client's father had visited my office earlier in the day, and I had to reassure him that I believed in my heart that we have a strong case to take to trial. It blows my mind to think that out of thousands of cases that are filed every day, mine made the news. A dinner I arranged at the last minute attracted record attendance. I'm on the board of our local vegetarian group, and our monthly meetings are usually on the second Saturday of the month. When I checked with the president about a place for our March meeting, I found out that no arrangements had been made. I volunteered to pick up the ball. On Tuesday, February 28th, I went to the top restaurant on my list, only to find out that the owner was out of town till Friday, March 3rd, but they'd leave a message for her to call me when she got back in town. Well, that wouldn't work. The next day, Wednesday, March 1st, I went to a Thai restaurant that had been open only for a few months. I spoke to the manager and asked if they could do a vegetarian dinner buffet. I told him that, based on my experience, 20 people would be a lock and a really good turnout would be a little over 30. He said they could do it, but would want a $100 deposit to make sure that they wouldn't take a hit if they bought a lot of extra food and no one showed up. I picked the menu, and it was an incredible deal. Vegetarian sushi, soup, 4 entrees, dessert and tea for $8. He said he'd check with the owner, and I'd have to arrange for the deposit check. On March 2nd, we were able to confirm it. I wrote a short announcement that the president could take and put into our e-newsletter. The dinner would be Saturday, March 11th, and I requested RSVPs by Thursday, March 9th at 5 p.m. Now, normally our president gets the monthly newsletter out either by a couple days before or after the first of the month. Most people get their newsletter by email, and some get it by snail mail. We also post it at local health food stores and libraries. This time around, though, the president didn't have time to put out a newsletter and basically sent out my email to her as an announcement on Sunday night, March 5th. The snail mail notices went out by postcard on Monday, and there were no public postings. I was beginning to think that we'd be lucky to get our 20 for the dinner. On Monday, the RSVPs started to trickle in. I heard from a couple of people. A few more came in on Tuesday, so I thought we'd get the 13 minimum we guaranteed with the deposit. However, starting on Wednesday, the RSVPs came pouring in like never before. By the end of the day, we were up to 37. It occurred to me that we might experience a different kind of problem. So I called the manager and asked him what the capacity of the restaurant was. He said it was 65. Well, the responses kept rolling in on Thursday, and by the time we hit our deadline, we were up to 55. I was not very productive at work that day before. I was so excited and focused on checking my email every few minutes. Could that be the attractor factor? I called the manager and asked if they could handle that many, and he said, sure. I take a Kabbalah class on Thursday evenings and didn't get home until after 9 o'clock. I checked phone and email and received even more reservations. The count got up to 67. I began to seriously think about what to do with the overflow. My brilliant idea was to see if I could get the late responders who were begging to be able to go to come a little later. My responses came in Friday and Saturday. We got up to a stunning number of 75. The event was a raging success. Not everyone who reserved attended, and a few showed up who didn't reserve at all, which is quite typical, actually. The energy in the restaurant was awesome, as before too long we had filled every seat in the place. This made a great impression on several people who had made the Thai buffet their first event. Some of the old-timers who were founding members over 10 years ago said that this was the record attendance for a Vegetarians of Oklahoma event. Staggering the seating worked perfectly. There were some who came for dinner and had to move on to other Saturday evening activities. There were always seats available for those who came later. The people at the restaurant were understandably pleased because they'd never had a group that large in before. Rental car miracles. I rented a car to go to Austin because I didn't want to put the extra wear and tear on mine. I compared rates and figured out that I'd do just as well to rent a car for a week than just renting from Wednesday to Monday. I got a good price online to rent a mid-sized car, which I thought would be more comfortable than a compact. When I got to the rental agency, I found that there were very few vehicles on the lot. I did happen to notice that they had two orange Chevy HHRs, which have a cool street rod look. When I went to the counter, I was told that they didn't have any mid-size cars to rent me. I asked if I could have an HHR, and they said that I could, even though they were classified as full-sized for some reason. I thought it would be cool to rent an orange hot rod to drive to Austin, since orange is one of the school colors for the University of Texas, my alma mater. However, when I drove it off the lot and to my office, I realized that while the car was neat-looking on the outside, it was cramped inside with bad sightlines. I wanted to return it. However, I needed the car to get to my office and to run some errands. I couldn't get it returned during the day. I contacted the agency about swapping the car for a more conventional sedan, but they said that they still didn't have what I wanted on the lot and that I'd have better luck in the morning. Well, I packed overnight and in the morning, and when I went out to the HHR to throw in my suitcase, I discovered, to my horror, that the car had a noticeable door ding on the rear passenger's door. Of course, I always decline the extra insurance, and I didn't remember seeing the dent the day before, so I thought I was screwed. I thought that I'd go ahead and hang on to the car for a week and see if I could figure something out. I left much later than I wanted to, around 12:30 p.m. on a Thursday, and I got to Austin around 6:30. Now, flash forward to Saturday evening at 5 p.m., an hour before I wanted to get to the Hyatt for the event with Joe and Dr. Hulen. I had spent too much time worrying about the dent and what I was going to do about it. I was at a shopping center in North Austin trying to find a disposable digital camera with absolutely no luck. When I got back into my car to drive back to the hotel, it was getting dark and there was a steady rain. I had stopped at a place to merge onto a busy street when I felt a sudden smack. I was rear-ended. Immediately I was thinking, oh shit, first the door ding, then this. I have a dinner in 1 hour that I've already paid for, but needed time to shower and change. On top of everything, this was a high traffic area, even on a Saturday evening. I got out of the HHR after first grabbing the rental registration information. A young black man met me in the street. "My tires," he said. "I've got to get new tires for my car. I couldn't get it stopped." Not a good thing to tell a lawyer, I thought. I said, "Crap, this is a rental car." We walked to the back of the HHR to survey the damage. We both looked and were stunned. There's no damage. There is no damage. Praise Jesus! Being Jewish, I thought that was amusing, but I looked myself, and I couldn't believe it. This car was apparently made with the collapsible plastic. Incredibly, he was right. There was no damage. I knew that I was going to be sore, but I didn't want to stick around and make a deal of this. I wanted to get back to my hotel. Well, we shook hands and went our own ways. I was able to make the dinner and sit at Joe and Narissa's table. I did some serious ho'oponopono-ing about what to do about the door ding. I put off seriously doing something about it until a couple of hours before I was supposed to return the car with penalty. I looked in the phone book and found a place that did paintless dent repair. The guy at the shop gave me an estimate of $95, but it would take him a few hours to complete the repair. That would put me into a rental penalty, which I really didn't want to do. I asked what to do, and the answer came clearly. Be honest. Call the local office of the rental agency and fess up. If they wanted to jam me on the repair, I at least had an estimate. I did call, and the guy on the phone told me not to have the car worked on, but to bring the car by so they could check their records and survey the dent themselves. I said fine. I took the car back and left it parked in the return lane. The customer service lady started scanning the barcode and taking readings on the HHR. I told her what was going on, and she sent me to the office trailer. I found the guy whom I talked to on the phone, and he punched the car's identification number in on his computer. Miracle 2. The damage was already noted on their records. I was not responsible. Hallelujah! I was home free! My sister was offered her dream job. My sister called 1 week after the evening with Joe and Dr. Hu Lin. She's a vice president for a division of a very large company you've heard of. She was contacted by a headhunter to find out if she would be interested in what she described as her dream job. She didn't want to tell me on the phone. Instead, she emailed me the job description she received from the recruiting agency. Well, I was knocked over. Let's just say the company is a luxury brand, and all I'd have to do is tell you one word, the company name, and that would say it all. A few months later, she was hired. Here's another.
When attending a Landmark Forum 3-day seminar in October 2006, Joe's shortcut to healing literally stopped the gushing waters. The nonstop gushing happened during the exercise called being with people, or something like that. In order to be with people, quote-unquote, the seminar leader divided 74 people into four rows, and then we took turns, one row at a time, just being with people by looking them in the eyes without talking. I was in row 3. The seminar leader called row 1 to step up on stage and face us. They looked at us sitting in our seats, and we looked back. Then row 2 was ordered up to the stage, and row 2 stood 1 foot away from, but facing, row 1. They were left looking into each other's eyes for 3 minutes. Then row 2 was asked to leave the stage and return to their seats. Again, row 1 was left on the stage to look at us in our seats and us to look at them on stage. The closer it got to my time on stage, the more I realized I was stressing, but I had no idea why. My hands started to sweat, and I noticed I also fidgeted in my seat. The task at hand seemed simple enough. I had always given great eye contact during conversations with strangers and friends my whole life. I would be just fine. Then I remembered at my first Landmark seminar, the forum leader shared his story of when he first experienced the same exercise. He said that when he participated in this exercise as an attendee over 20 years before, his knee shook so hard that an assistant from the seminar placed his jacket between the knees to stop the noise. Thinking back to what he said, I felt like leaving the room. I told myself that I didn't need to continue the exercise, that I was great looking people in the eye already. But I knew that leaving the room wouldn't be tolerated, so I stayed in my seat, sweating and fidgeting. The first time my row was invited on stage was to stand 1 foot away from another row and look into their eyes. Whew! I don't have to look at 50 people, I just have to look at one, I thought. We got positioned and the seminar leader started guiding us through our 3-minute process of self-discovery. But before the first 10 seconds was over, I was crying uncontrollably, gushing water, and I had no idea why. I couldn't stop crying. Every time I looked at my partner across from me, I just sobbed. Row 3, please exit to your left, I heard. I said thank you to my partner and left. What the hell happened to me? I was supposed to listen to what my inner voice told me, but I never heard a thing. I was just overwhelmed. No words. I didn't learn anything. What kind of exercise is this? I was confused, embarrassed, and left to ponder my experience as the exercise continued on the stage in front of me. Row 3, please stand, turn to your right, and go to the stage. Oh, God, not again, I screamed in my mind. Now my row was facing the people seated off stage. I survived this 3 minutes because I didn't look at the people who were looking at me. Now, row 4 was ordered onto the stage, and a new partner was now standing in front of me, 1 foot away from my face. This time, I was face to face with a kinder, older woman who smiled at me shyly. Okay, I think I can handle this time, I told myself. But then the tears started gushing as soon as the exercise began. Each time I looked into her eyes, the tears just gushed and I turned away. She quietly tried to comfort me by telling me everything was going to be okay. I was embarrassed and confused by my unexplained tear gushes. The seminar leader was directing all of us to listen to what was inside of our heads, what we said to ourselves, but my voice wasn't talking. Then I suddenly remembered that I could fill my head with thoughts instead of trying to listen to my thoughts. My inner voice wasn't talking to me anyway. Once I put thoughts in my head that were better than what was there, I immediately looked again at my partner and thought, thank you. I love you. Thank you. I'm sorry. I love you. Thank you. And so on. I immediately got comforted and was filled with appreciation and love for the woman across from me. I felt better and the gushing stopped. I was looking at her and I was not gushing tears. But to my surprise, my partner started crying. Tears started streaming down her face. And her head started shaking slightly just back and forth, and she whispered, oh, now you're making me cry. I just kept sending her my private thoughts. Thank you. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. And so on. Then my partner was directed off the stage, and I was left standing again in front of 50 people who were directed to look and evaluate me in my row. But now I was at total inner peace, and I was able to look at people who were looking at me. In fact, I sought them out. I only looked at people who were looking at me, and I felt so much better. I could be with strangers. I loved everybody and really, really appreciated them. Soon the exercise was completed and the seminar continued. Then we had a short break. The kind woman who had been my last partner sought me out, and we talked about our experience. I told her I was obviously scared of people, but I never knew it. She told me she felt like we really connected, and went on to say that the seminar was helping her too because she realized she had had a difficult time accepting love from others. Well, then it was obvious I had to share with her the healing technique I had used to make me stop crying when we were on stage together. She started crying again. We hugged and then parted to continue on our short break. Signed, Narissa Oden, TheVideoQueen.com.
Earlier this year, I discovered that an employee of mine had been taking larger sales commissions than she should have. This amounted to hundreds of dollars in loss to me and my small business. She refused to take responsibility for these actions. This is a hard-working employee who would not get another job in our small town making the kind of money she does with me. I had compassion for her, but I was also very angry and hurt. In the days that followed, I couldn't speak to her except about specific work-related subjects, and I could barely look at her. I didn't know what to do. I turned to Joe, and what happened next was truly amazing. He thanked me for contacting him. Then he gave me specific steps to take to clear the energy. First, I needed to understand that I attracted the situation. Not easy to do, but essential to the process. Then I must forgive myself, the employee, and the energy surrounding the problem. Next, I must set new intentions for how I want the situation to be, and I begin repeating Dr. Lin's healing words of, "I'm sorry, please forgive me, and I love you." The result was extraordinary. What follows is my note to Joe after I completed the process. "Dear Joe, your suggestions were so right on. After I read them, I had to drive from Wimberley to Austin, and I did each step that you laid out. It was simply amazing. I took plenty of time to understand that I truly attracted this, and then forgave myself, my employee, and the energy surrounding it. I set new intentions and repeated that phenomenal Hawaiian healing method many times. By the time I reached Austin, I felt like a ton of bricks had been lifted from my chest and stomach. After I followed Joe's suggestions, the energy completely shifted inside of me. The anger and hurt were gone. It was truly amazing. The working environment with my employee is fine now. Suzanne, if anyone asks me if this system really works, I say it absolutely works. Signed, Victoria Schaefer, Publisher, Petal Ranch Publications, Wimberley, Texas."
This is a dream I was given in October 2006, and it fits in perfectly with Ho'oponopono. It was submitted by Denise Kalonsky of Shreveport, Louisiana.
"I saw a world without prisons because there was no need for them as a result of the philosophy of Ho'oponopono. The simplicity of the message of Ho'oponopono, which was shared by Dr. Len, Joe, myself, and others who practice it, was being shared all over the world in programs and seminars. These programs taught people, especially young children, how to love themselves, and in so doing, to love one another. I saw in my dream, teaching seminar after seminar, attended by thousands and thousands of people. In these seminars, I was inspiring people to remember who they truly are, their divine nature, and what to do to be that person, to remember that their true nature is to love. In this dream, I saw a teenage youth gang member pointing a gun at another gang member's head, threatening to shoot him. The youth under threat had just attended my seminar at his school. He kept talking about a miracle and wanted his tribe to experience the miracle too. But they were sick and tired of hearing about it. In this seminar, he remembered his true nature. He was sharing his revelation with his fellow gang members, and they felt threatened by his message because it was all too simple, and it just seemed too easy and hoaxy. You see, in the seminar this young gang member had attended, he walked onto the stage and shot me in the gut. As I lay on the floor, my blood and life force flowing out of my body, I had the youth brought over to me, and I embraced him, and I whispered in his ear, 'Please forgive me. I love you.' And I died in his arms, embracing him with every ounce of love in my being. In that instant, the youth got the message. As he embraced my dead body, he whispered to me through his sobs and tears, 'Please forgive me. I love you.' In that instant, life force returned to my body, and we were both filled with a beautiful golden light that was so powerful, everyone in the audience and for miles around us could feel the love we two generated together. As this love energy was noticed by those it touched, it grew larger and larger and spread out farther and farther. But not everyone was yet willing to notice. This young gang member of whom this story is about, this young man who now held a gun to his own brother's head, was unwilling to notice and receive the love. The saved youth said to him, "Please forgive me. I love you," and embraced him and loved him as if he were loving and embracing all the darkest parts of himself. And then it happened. The two were filled with the golden glow of love energy, and the other youth took the time to notice it and receive this love he was being given. When he got it, he said to the other, "Please forgive me. I love you, brother. Please forgive me." Guess what happens next? The two were filled with a beautiful golden globe of love energy, which grew larger and larger. As it filled the room and touched each gang member, and they too noticed the love and received it, this golden love energy poured out into the streets and for miles and miles around. As others noticed, they passed it on, and this golden love energy grew and traveled farther and wider until the entire globe was filled with love. This is the golden age, the age of love. This is why we have been given this gift of Ho'oponopono, to remember who we are and that our true nature is to love. We all just want to be loved. Beautiful dream, isn't it? It would make a beautiful movie to tell the story of Ho'oponopono. I think of the movie Pay It Forward and what an impact that is making in the world. The world is ready for Ho'oponopono. Within the first 7 days after I returned home from Joe Vitale's very first manifestation weekend, I could hardly count the number of miracles that happened. Like a sponge, I soaked up all the energy, the lessons, and the message, and my results continue to manifest at lightning speed. To name a few of my tangible results, new clients flock to me. New contracts seem to appear out of thin air. I've been approached for countless joint ventures. My opt-in list has increased by more than 300% at the time of this writing. I've been asked to make a number of celebrity appearances, and I can hardly keep up with all the amazingly inspired ideas that come to me out of the clear blue sky. To think, just 3 months earlier, I was an unknown in my industry. All of this happened without force, without trying, and without any real effort on my part. It has all quite literally flowed to me easily, effortlessly, abundantly. When I get an inspired idea, I now take action immediately, and I'm positively blown away by the results. I have frequently used the Ho'oponopono eraser method to grow my business exponentially, and I can't wait to see what I create next as I continue to return to the whiteboard and clean, clean, clean. Thank you, Joe and Dr. Hulin. Eternally grateful, Amy Scott Grant.
Joyce McKee wrote,
"During the past year, I took on a new role. I was a caretaker. My mother left her home of many years to relocate nearer her daughters, partly because of some challenges in our lives. Shortly thereafter, my sturdy, lifelong rock matriarch was diagnosed with congestive heart failure and small cell lung cancer. Wonderfully and gracefully, she chose to live out her remaining time with her daughters. She decided not to pursue cancer treatment at her age, 88 years old. So the medical professionals told us she would soon be out of time in this life. The previous May, I attended Joe Vitale's Beyond Manifestation weekend and learned of Dr. Hulin and his Ho'oponopono practice. I was intrigued, hearing of the amazing results with the mentally ill criminals when he went inward to clean and clear himself impacted me greatly. The universe is so gracious and provides the teacher when the student is ready. The timing was perfect. My main question that weekend, how can I be used to help my mother in her dying process? I was willing to show up and acknowledge to the universe that I am 100%